Hello, welcome to the inaugural episode of Fantasy Football 613 Sports Talk. I'm your host, CB. Now, the date today, July 15th, 2013. Some people on my Twitter feed are asking why I started a podcast now on fantasy football. Fantasy football season's over. Well, that is a good point. But I figured that, you know, we can recap this year, talk a few other sports things. So that's why I call it Fantasy Football 613 Sports Talk. So we can talk about the BCS. We can talk about the NFL playoffs coming up. And we can go ahead and talk about some spreads, some handicaps, and some over-under for this weekend's championship games. So please bear with me. This is my first podcast. This is brought to you by nobody, since we don't have a sponsor. If we had a sponsor, I probably would be sitting in my bathrobe, sipping coffee in a room that I share with dogs. And I also probably wouldn't wait for my wife to be at work before I did stuff like this. So we're going to do the best we can. Like I said before, this will be the first podcast. This is January 15th. I believe we'll probably do monthly podcasts until the NFL season starts back up again. And then we'll really dedicate most of the time to fantasy and answering questions about fantasy football. So if you want to get a hold of me, the Twitter feed is fantasyfootball613. Email is fantasyfootball613@hotmail.com. I answer questions, talk about sports. I have a lot of fantasy guys on my Twitter feed that send me live updates, so I'm able to update people right afterwards as well. People that have more connections than I do, obviously. The show is being broadcast a couple hours east of Toronto, so proud to say this is one of the few Canadian fantasy football shows I've seen out there. Also, since we are Canadian, we'll talk about other things. We'll talk about hockey. You know, NHL lockout's over, so feel free to throw questions about the lockout. Don't talk about the Leafs, hopefully. I mean, we will, but you won't like what the answers I give you. So anyways, let's dive right into a recap of last year's fantasy football season. A lot of questions I had on my Twitter feed were, you know, what surprised you the most about 2012? And what surprised me the most, I mean, it was really up in the air. It was between the success of the rookie quarterbacks and the absolute dismal play of first-round running backs, that ones that were drafted in the first round. If you look at the stats, I mean, RG3, I know we're talking pre-injury here. RG3 was the number one ranked quarterback, fantasy points-wise, going into the playoffs. I know because I actually had him on my team. Of course, RG3 got hurt, and he missed, I think it was the game against Cleveland, where Kirk Cousins started. And he ended up the sixth-ranked quarterback overall, because his play did take a hit. But as far as rookie goes, I mean, he was this year's Cam Newton from last year. I mean, Cam Newton also was very impressive in his rookie year. But Cam Newton was the only one. This year you had Russell Wilson, and you also had Andrew Luck. They were 9 and 10, respectively, in fantasy points. And, I mean, what can you say about that? You're looking at three guys who are rookie quarterbacks who are in the top 10 fantasy-wise. That means if you're top 10, that means you should be starting on a team every week. I mean, they beat guys like Matthew Stafford, who was a very high selection. They beat Eli Manning, who had a very, very inconsistent year. I mean, a lot of talks about Eli and what he would do coming off a Super Bowl. And he was very up and down. He'd throw for 400 yards against the Redskins. And then he'd, I think it was against Atlanta, where he threw for, maybe 175, 200 yards and a few picks. But yeah, that was definitely a big surprise when it came to fantasy football this year, was just the productivity of guys like Russell Wilson and Andrew Luck. I mean, going forward, I think Andrew Luck will be the best one of all of them. I mean, You hear nothing but praise from everyone about this guy. They say he's the next Ben Roethlisberger, but he's got more accuracy. And I mean, you look at a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, that's probably the only hit he has, is that he's not the most accurate and not the smartest quarterback, but he extends plays like no one else does. And they're saying Andrew looks just like him. I mean, they're saying he's got the size, he's got the physicality, that he's tough to bring down. So going forward, I mean, you look at RG3 and that injury he took in the wild card weekend. I mean, that's going to set him back 9 to 12 months from the looks of it. And that's the second major operation on that knee. Has he also injured the same knee at Baylor when he was playing there. So his recovery, I mean, usually you'd say a year, eh? I mean, Adrian Peterson kind of proved everyone wrong with that last year, and we'll touch a bit on that in a bit. But we'll see with Robert Griffin. I mean, if you injure the same knee twice, both times, you need major reconstruction surgery. I don't know. It's tough to say what's going to happen with him. Looking forward to next year, I want to point something out that I looked at that I actually, even I was surprised at, is Cam Newton finished sixth. Cam Newton was the sixth ranked quarterback in fantasy. And I remember at the start of the year, all everyone talked about was what was wrong with Cam Newton. Well, it turns out nothing was wrong with Cam Newton. Cam Newton was still Cam Newton. And he's a guy that, should get picked right up where he was picked last year. I mean, I think he was picked in my main league. I think he was picked in the second round, if I remember correctly. And the guy ended up giving up on him. I mean, he was begging me. He was begging me for a trade for Cam Newton, and he ended up basically giving away. And the guy that got him, don't think he made the playoffs, but he made a nice run at the end because Cam Newton played so well. So Cam Newton's definitely a guy to look for next year. Always look for the same guys, though. Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning finished top four in quarterbacks. And who's surprised by that? Nobody, obviously. Peyton Manning, I was the one who actually drafted Peyton Manning. I traded him for RG3. And I think I drafted Peyton Manning with the seventh round. So, like, that's not going to happen again. Peyton Manning will. I mean, depending on what kind of league you're in, he goes either first round, second, or third. He doesn't get past the third round, in my opinion. Depends how people feel about guys like Matt Ryan, how guys feel about Matt Stafford, guys like that. So we'll see. As far as quarterbacks coming out of the draft next year, there's no one really that stands out. You got Matt Barkley from USC. I mean, the guy had two All-American wide receivers, and he still couldn't really get it done. Now, USC is they're a flawed program, to say the least. So, other than that, there's a guy from Georgia. They don't know if he's coming out or not, though. I'm trying to think of his name. I can't off the top of my head. And there's also a couple other guys. Geno Smith from West Virginia. But, I think everyone's kind of waiting on Johnny Manziel, to be honest with you. So, anyways, let's, excuse me. Let's talk about the first round running backs here. Lot of people would have taken guys like, let's see, Arian Foster, Ray Rice, Jamaal Charles, Matt Forte, Darren McFadden, Chris Johnson, Maurice Jones-Drew, Frank Gore. I mean, these guys were all first round running backs. And Arian Foster had a good year. Actually, Arian Foster had a great year, I'll say. He was a third ranked running back. I mean, Adrian Peterson was the first, and he was, the first by far too. He's about 50 points ahead of Doug Martin. But Arian Foster, great year. Ray Rice also had another solid year for him. But after that, I mean, you look at the first round guys. I mean, Matt Forte, bad year, like really bad year, averaging 11 points a game. Darren McFadden, I mean, the guy is just the guy can't stay healthy. What can you say? People who draft him in the first round next year will, I think, right now you want some advice, that's ludicrous. Drafting him in the first round next year would be crazy. If it was a five-game season, I'd say draft Terry McFadden in the top five. But he can't play 16 games. He proved that when he was at Arkansas. Be wary of guys who can't even stay healthy in college. You can't stay healthy in college? Well, you're gonna have a tough time staying healthy in the NFL. And I mean, he was a dynamic player. He was probably the most versatile, athletic, dangerous player when he played at Arkansas. But he couldn't even stay in the field there. So if you can't stay in the field in college, good luck staying in the field in the NFL. Chris Johnson, it'll be interesting to see where he goes next year. He ended up finishing okay. I mean, he finished 13th amongst running backs. Will he get a first round selection next year? I doubt it. I mean, they're going to be revamping that offense again. Jake Locker looks like he's not the answer. So we'll see. Jamal Charles, another guy. Interesting to see where he goes. I mean, guys I like for next year, obviously, Adrian Peterson. I mean, like I was touching on base earlier, the guy, he really showed us something coming back after less than a year. I mean, if anyone remembers that game where he injured his knee, I mean, I thought he was done until 2014. When I say 2014, I mean next year's, the start of next year. And, you know, he comes back week one, and then he has one of the greatest seasons of ever for running back, 2,000 yards. I mean, didn't pile up the touchdowns, but, you know, he did pretty well. Doug Martin came out of nowhere, too. So look for him next year. I mean, like, they'll, young guy like that, they'll just keep feeding him the ball. As far as guys down the line, I mean, I like Trent Richardson a lot. You're going to give the guy like that the ball 30 times a game. I mean, I'm not saying you're going to hand it off to him 30 times a game, but you're going to either hand it off to him or pass to him. He's going to touch the ball 30 times because you don't have anyone else. You have a rookie quarterback. When I say rookie quarterback, the guy's going to be 29 next year. So I don't know where the thought process was there. Also, Cleveland also going through another shakeup management and coaching staff-wise. But you have a guy like Trent Richardson, who's obviously a talent. I mean, like, you watched him play last year. He still found the end zone quite a few times playing on a team with not many other players on offense. They had a good defense, but they didn't have many other players on offense. So I like him next year. I like C.J. Spiller a lot. Fred Jackson can't seem to stay in the field either, and he's sharing carries and he can't stay in the field. So that probably won't bode well for him as far as his future in Buffalo goes. And they're also going to be shaking out coaches. It's interesting how many guys will be shaking out their coaching staffs this year. So other than that, another guy I do like is David Wilson for the Giants. Look out for him. I mean, those last two games, everyone saw what kind of speed and moves he has, not just in the return game, but lining up as a running back, catching the ball in the backfield. I mean, the guy is versatile. So, I mean, he's a guy to keep your eye on next year. I don't know if you'd be drafting him too high. But, and then there's always the guys that play with great quarterbacks. I mean, Stephen Ridley. Who would have thought he would be a great running back this year? But, you know, he finished 11th. You look for guys who have great quarterbacks. Look at Willis McGahee before he got hurt. He was having a bit of a rejuvenation in his career. It helps a lot when the defense has to worry about Peyton Manning all day. And it helps a lot for a guy like Stephen Ridley when the Patriots play a hurry-up offense and teams can't get set. So look out for guys like that. Those guys are good guys to have on your team. So that's it for the NFL fantasy season, I think. Like I said, we'll touch more as the year goes on. We'll look forward to the draft and talk about guys that are coming out that could impact next year's fantasy, as well as guys when the new NFL year starts. I believe it's March 1st or April. I think it's March 1st when the new NFL's calendar year begins and guys can start looking elsewhere free agent-wise. I mean, you're going to see guys change places. You're going to see receivers go different places. Calvin Johnson. That's all I got to say about wide receivers, though. I mean, he's the only guy worthy of your first-round pick. If you don't get Calvin Johnson in your first round, then don't even worry about picking a receiver for a couple more rounds, in my opinion. So I want to talk a bit about the BCS this year, just a bit of a wrap-up. I know the championship game was about 10 days ago, and Alabama, crushed Notre Dame. I like to compare the SEC to that Dennis Green press conference. If you guys remember that one when he coached Arizona, and they lost to Chicago, and Chicago was having Chicago had a Super Bowl team that year. And he says, they are who we thought they were. And that's what the SEC is in college football. They are who we thought they were. They're the best conference in college football, and it's not even close. The fact that there's a lot of people on the Sports Illustrated website, SI.com, that were picking Notre Dame to win. Oh, this is a team of destiny. This is a team of destiny. It's not a team of destiny. They played a half-decent schedule. They got a lot of lucky breaks. I still don't think they beat Stanford. I mean, the guy was in overtime. He crossed the goal line. I don't know how the refs called that one the way they did. Notre Dame had a great year. I mean, they had a great linebacker on defense, Heisman finalist. But do you think they're going to be able to compete with the SEC? Do you think they could have competed with Alabama? And do you think they could compete with a few other teams? LSU, A&M, Georgia, Florida. Do you think Notre Dame would beat those teams too? Probably not. I tell a couple guys at work that who are big Notre Dame fans, I say, if you guys played an SEC schedule, you'd have lost four or five games. They just get mad. You know, oh, we played Oklahoma, we played Miami, we played Michigan, we played USC. I said, oh, you played Michigan, I'll give you that. Michigan was a good team this year. Michigan had Denard Robinson, and they had some good players on offense. And the Michigan will be good again next year. So you had a good win there. It was at home. Michigan did turn the ball over five times, but it was a good win. Going into Oklahoma was a good win at the time. But Kansas State beat Oklahoma soundly in Oklahoma. A&M destroyed Oklahoma in the bowl game. You know, I mean, is Oklahoma really that good? No. Is the Big 12 the worst conference in the BCS? In this guy's opinion, yes. Who's good? K-State was their champion. Look what Oregon did to K-State in the bowl game. Texas has just fallen off the map. I mean, Mac Brown has a 10-year contract there, and I wouldn't be surprised if they'd buy him out if things keep going the way they do. But yeah, it's funny that the Big 12, I think, is past the Big East as far as, ineptitude in BCS conference play. Louisville looked great against Florida. I don't think Florida came to play. I don't think Florida respected Louisville and thought they'd just walk all over him being from the SEC. You still got to prepare for a team. I mean, if Alabama didn't prepare for Notre Dame, the game would probably been a lot different. But Louisville looked good. Their quarterback looked great. Look out for them next year. I mean, maybe not as national championship contenders, but I bet you they're back in the BCS, which is next year is the last year of the BCS. And it's about time. I was a huge supporter of the BCS. I mean, I loved it. 5-6 years ago, I used to have arguments with my friends about it. I used to say, look, this is a playoff. The whole season's a playoff. But now, it's actually unfair to be a Southeastern Conference team. You look at a team like Georgia, you look at a team like A&M, they can't get through that regular season without one or two losses. And there goes their national championship hopes. If they played in the Big 12, Texas A&M, they still play in the Big 12. They would be probably already written in, penciled in for the national championship next year because they'd run that conference right out of the water with Johnny Manziel. They wouldn't even be close. But you got to play in the SEC. Unless you're Alabama, unless you're maybe LSU, you're not getting through that without a loss. They're the only teams that seem to do that. Unless you have a guy like Cam Newton in Auburn, but he was a once-in-a-generation player. So next year, look for two SEC teams to play in the final of the BCS. Look for Alabama to play LSU. Look for Alabama to play Georgia. Or maybe LSU upends Alabama in the regular season and gets them in the championship game too. I mean, it could happen. Alabama's not safe, but right now they look like they're... they look pretty good. McCarron's coming back next year, which is good for us because we get to see more of McCarron's girlfriend. Catherine Webb, I believe her name is. That was actually quite comical how much flack Musburger got over that. I mean, he was just pointing out what everyone knew was that she's insanely hot. But yeah, that's pretty much all I can say with the BCS. I mean, Notre Dame didn't even deserve to be there, in my opinion. I mean, they had a nice undefeated season. If you have trouble knocking off Pitt at home, an unranked Pitt team from the Big East, you think you're going to beat Alabama? Think you'll beat LSU? Think you'll beat Georgia? That's unlikely. And they just had one of their guys declare to go pro, and I think another one of their guys lost his fifth-year medical redshirt application, so... They'll still be a good team next year. I just don't see them being national championship contenders again. I think Michael Wilbon was saying that if they finished 11th or 12th next year, that would be an accomplishment. Or was it maybe Peter King who said that? It was funny how Brian Kelly was flirting with the NFL. I don't know how well he'd do in the NFL. I was telling a couple of guys at work that are big Notre Dame fans. I said he's very much like a drill sergeant. And that doesn't seem to play very well in the pros. I mean, you saw what happened with Nick Saban. You saw what happened with Bobby Petrino. If you're going to come from college and you're going to come and play and coach in the NFL, I think you need to be able to relate with professional players. They're not kids. The way that Brian Kelly screams at his players on the sideline, I don't know if other... I mean, I can only think of two coaches that are in the pros, Tom Coughlin and probably Greg Schiano. Excuse me, that act like that. Well, Coughlin's got two Super Bowls. I mean, that kind of... I think that commands respect from his players, so he gets away with it. And Greg Schiano seems like a... I mean, I didn't like how he acted in the Giants game last year and he was rushing the QB kneel, but the players seem to like him a lot. He seems like he knows how to motivate them. So there's a fine line there between motivation and almost being authoritarian, but he seems to cross that and he seems to kind of be able to juggle it well. So we'll see with him going forward with Tampa Bay. If Josh Freeman can get a new contract, they seem to be a team on the rise. So, let's wrap up the BCS there, and let's talk about Championship Weekend. Two big games. You got San Francisco as 4-point favorites going into Atlanta. People are wondering why they're favorites against a team that was number one in the NFC. Well, I'll give you two words, Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick looked, he looked like Michael Vick at Virginia Tech last week against Green Bay. Now, Mike Kaepernick gets respect, gets credit for what he did. Green Bay's defense, well, they looked... I mean, I haven't seen a defense that poorly coached in a long time to stop the pistol read. I mean, the defensive end didn't keep containment, not just on a couple of runs, ever. Kaepernick would fake the handoff to Gore, he'd roll out, and there'd be no one there. I mean... Who's coaching this guy? He was running down the line every time trying to tackle the running back. You have to keep containment on guys like this. You have to keep containment on Russell Wilson, on RG3, on Cam Newton, on Colin Kaepernick, guys like this. I mean, you can't just let them roll out because they're running all day on you. Kaepernick is fast enough, too. Like he said, he ran a 4.4. I mean, he's not as fast as a healthy RG3. He's not as fast as a young Michael Vick. But he's still really fast. I mean, he's still fast enough that he had no problem outrunning Charles Woodson. Charles Woodson 10 years ago might have run him down, but I mean, I love the guy, but there's a reason Charles is playing safety now. It's his physicality. It's no longer his athletic ability. So honestly, look for the Niners to cover that. I'd give the points up if I was a gambling man, which I am, and I will be giving the points up. The Niners' defense is outstanding. Atlanta's offense has moments where they seem to fall asleep. So, I mean, you take it from there. If Kaepernick can do what Kaepernick did last week against Green Bay, if he can, you know, find some running room, hit open receivers, it won't even be close. If they can keep Kaepernick contained, then it'll be a close game. It'll be a very close game. They were lucky to beat Seattle last week. A lot of Atlanta fans are very upset about them losing that lead and letting Seattle back in the game. That's fine. You can be upset. Keep in mind, Seattle is an outstanding football team. I mean, outstanding. If Seattle came back and won that game, people were saying that Mike Smith should be fired. I don't know about that. I mean, if I were the Niners and the Rams... And the Cardinals are terrible, so I wouldn't worry about them. But I'd be wary of the Seahawks for the next few years with Russell Wilson as my quarterback and Pete Carroll coaching that team with that defense, with those cornerbacks, with those safeties, with those linebackers. I mean, their defense looks like they're going to be great. As much as you might hate that Sherman guy, I mean, he is good. He's physical. He's athletic. He can run. He can turn his hips. I mean, watch out for them next year. That was their game to win. If they didn't blow a couple of those plays in the first half, bad clock management, going for them third and one, fourth one, not using Marshawn Lynch. I mean, they call him beast mode for a reason. I agree with the critics on that one. Those were bad plays, but Seattle could easily win that game. So I wouldn't have hung my head too low if I was Atlanta, but it is what it is. Let me just bring up the over-under here. I don't know if anyone's noticed or not, but if you ever look at the over-under, on wildcard weekend, of the four games, all four went under the total points. On divisional weekend of the four games, all four went over. So, I mean, good luck betting on this league, eh? Pretty much impossible. So the over-under is 48.5. I go under on this one. I do think Atlanta will do a better job keeping Kaepernick contained. I think the Niners are still covered. Oh, and actually the point spread has dropped to 3.5. So it's dropped in a day. Yesterday it was 4 points. So when you keep that in mind, if for people who aren't that familiar with gambling, you usually get 3 points for playing at home. So if you look at if the Niners were at home, they'd probably be with 7-point favorites. Keep that in mind. So they're 3.5 now. So I'd give the points, and I take the under. That's a 3 o'clock start on Sunday. Now the Baltimore New England game, that's the tough game. That, in my opinion, that's the tough game to watch. That's a tough game to bet on. I mean, you got a 9-point spread for New England. And I was the first one. I said right in my Twitter feed last week when the spread came out, 10.5 for the Patriots over the Texans. I said, that's crazy. I said, they're both 12-4. Houston was the best team in the AFC for the first 8 weeks of the regular season. How can you make a team a 10.5-point favorite? But as the week went on, I kind of kept thinking to myself, I said, well, how is Houston going to stop Tom Brady? And they can't. They couldn't. They didn't. Tom Brady did whatever he wanted. He ran the hurry-up offense perfectly. I mean, he lost his best target in Gronkowski. And you didn't even notice. You honestly didn't even notice. I mean, and look at this. No, is anyone making a big deal of Gronkowski being done for the season? No one's making a big deal of it. Belichick and Brady, that's all they need. That's all they've done. There was an article this week in Sports Illustrated on the website about Tom Brady's legacy and how, you know, for a guy who's won 3 Super Bowls, who is 1 win away from going to his 6th Super Bowl, he's underrated. And he is. He's absolutely underrated. Does he get the same hype as Peyton Manning? Not even. Like, now he will, but all people talked about all year was Peyton Manning, MVP, neck surgery. I thought Brady had a better year. But he does it every year, and I think people take that for granted. I think it's very much, and I hate to use this as a comparison because I don't think they're the same caliber athlete, but it reminds me in a way of Michael Jordan and how he could have been MVP every year in the NBA. He won it 6 times. They could have gave it to him every year he played. Now, I'm not saying Brady's the same way, but I think part of the reason people don't, you know, maybe credit him as much as they do is because he does it so often that you'd only notice it if he stopped doing it, if that makes sense to you. I mean, we're talking about a guy that if 2 plays had gone his way in either Super Bowl against the Giants, he'd have 5 rings. And we wouldn't be talking about his legacy. We'd already be confirming him as the greatest NFL player ever. And the only discussion now is where he ranks among athletes. Now, you'll never have anyone's surpass Jordan in my belief. I mean, unless I got to see it to believe it, but no one I've seen will ever be better than Michael Jordan athletically as far as dominating a sport. And we can have that debate all day. If you want to call in, if you want to write me, Twitter feed is FantasyBall613. We can talk about. I will freely talk about a Michael Jordan debate all day with people. I mean, I love to call my buddies who try and tell me, excuse me, Kobe Bryant is just as good now. I just laugh. I just think that's hilarious. Kobe Bryant wasn't the best player in his team for 3 of those championships. I mean, 3 of those titles was when Shaq was absolutely dominating basketball. I mean, so that is just priceless. Kobe's a great player. Probably top 10. But don't even come close telling me he's Michael Jordan. You saw what Scottie Pippen was like when Michael Jordan wasn't around. Terrible. Anyways, we're off topic here. Let's get back to the New England game. So Tom Brady, in those 2 games, so the first game against the Giants, the undefeated season, Asante Samuel dropped an easy interception on the same drive that they threw the ball to Plaxico for a touchdown. The same drive where David Tyree had that helmet catch. So you'd have another thing that went against the Patriots. Now, I'm not saying the Giants didn't deserve that game. They did. The Giants came prepared. They rushed Tom. They hit him. They knocked him down. They deserved it. They had the perfect team to beat the Patriots. They had a team that could press the QB without blitzing. And if you can do that in the NFL, you'll win a lot of football games. Last year, though, I mean, you didn't have a Patriots team outside of Tom Brady and Gronkowski and Welker and Aaron Hernandez. You had four players. The defense was, a lot of critics, a lot of analysts said that was the worst defense to ever make the Super Bowl. And they proved it. They couldn't stop Eli Manning when they had to. Eli's a great player. Eli is a big game player. He doesn't win enough in the regular season to get to enough big games to prove it more, as much as he probably wants to. He seems to fall asleep a bit during the regular season, but in big games, he is a big game player. He's almost the opposite of his brother. If his brother could just sign with a team together, Peyton Manning would play all the regular season games, Eli would play the playoffs. Yeah, they'd never lose. They wouldn't. But, I mean, if Wes Welker catches that deep ball last year, which he would do 99 times out of 100, we're talking about four titles for the Patriots. But, so I in my personal opinion, I don't think Tom Brady gets enough credit because he's the only player on that team. I saw an interesting stat the other day. They said, how many players on offense did Tom Brady win a Super Bowl with that are going to the Hall of Fame? The answer is zero. Of his three Super Bowls, not one of those players he played on offense with is going to the Hall of Fame. Of his five Super Bowl appearances, how many players on offense are going to the Hall of Fame? It's one. That'd be Randy Moss. 1 year in the Super Bowl. And Randy Moss was great that year. And he made Brady better. That was the year they both set records that year. Now, that was their undefeated season. That's it. I mean, you look at Joe Montana, he had Jerry Rice. Roger Craig. I mean, he had guys. He had players. John Elway. I mean, that last two Super Bowls, he had Shannon Sharp. He had Terrell Davis. Terrell Davis doing his Gale Sayers impression for those 2 years. I mean, you couldn't stop Terrell Davis. He was that good. So, I wish people would give Brady more credit. I think that he's getting older. And once he's gone, this league will miss him. They will. They'll miss a guy like that. And the Patriots will never be the same again. That's for sure. So, personally, if we're talking... We're talking this weekend's game. We're talking New England. We're talking Baltimore. I know I've gotten off topic. I'm trying to pick a game, and I'm also trying to put my opinion out by a few things here. Baltimore, team of destiny? I believe so. Are they going to win? No. But take the points. 9 points, too many points. They'll keep it closer. Joe Flacco plays great against New England. He's not scared to go in there and play. He's won in there more than once. Could have beat them last year if it wasn't for a drop pass. Wasn't for a missed field goal. I mean, Joe Flacco ain't scared to go into Foxborough and play football, that's for sure. As far as the over-under, I have to go under again. I mean, 51.5 points, that's a lot. I don't know if New England will put the same amount of points up they have the last few weeks. Not with an inspired Ravens defense, but you also know that Baltimore's not going to put up a lot of points. I mean, they're not going to put up what they did against Denver. I don't see this. I don't see the Patriots safeties allowing the kind of touchdowns Denver allowed last week. That's my opinion. Okay, so that probably wraps it up. I'm about to hit the 35-minute mark, so I was trying to keep this under 30 minutes. I just want to keep people's attention. So anyways, Fantasy Football 613, that's the Twitter handle. Fantasy Football 613. At hotmail.com. That's the email address. Send any questions. This will be uploaded to Podomatic. This will be also uploaded to iTunes. I said we'll have another episode in probably a month. We'll talk more about football. We'll know We'll have a good list of who's declaring for the draft, so we can talk a little fantasy that way about which guys we like. And also, the greatest tournament in sports is just around the corner. And that's March Madness. And people might not be basketball fans, especially up here in Canada. I mean, everyone loves hockey. I love hockey, too. I mean, what Canadian boy didn't grow up playing hockey? But even if you don't like basketball and you don't like to gamble, go online and just fill a bracket out. I mean, it is absolutely the greatest tournament in sports. 32 games over 2 days. 16 games over the next 2 days. I mean, it's just, it's great. And honestly, guys, it is a great way to make money. Especially on Pro Line for you people who live in Ontario. Everyone knows the Pro Line, you can bet ties. And games within 5 points, all those 8, 9, 7, 10, 6, 11 seeds, those games are usually very close games. And the 5-12s are always close. It's like the curse. So we'll talk about that next month. And we'll talk about a few other things. We'll have NHL will be rolling. Basketball will be winding down. And I know some people don't want to hear this, but golf will be around the corner. We can even talk Masters if people want. So anyways, Fantasy Football 613 is the Twitter feed. FantasyFootball@hotmail.com is the email. Send questions, send comments. Good night. God bless. Oh, and by the way, I don't think I mentioned this at the start of the podcast. My name is CB. And hoping to do this for the next couple of years. You know, some way to share my thoughts, share my opinions. As someone who avidly watches football, both on the pro and college level. So everyone take care, and God bless.